Hello, this is Atta Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 16, 2020. Coming to you from my home studio, we start on the front page, Decatur Scouting. Build like an eagle, Mount Zion Eagle Scout has mission to help others. This article's by Valerie Wells from Decatur. The Three Sisters Garden is a quiet and impressive oasis in the midst of a busy neighborhood. Rows of raised beds, fruit trees, flowers, and not a weed in sight have already yielded produce for the weekly prescription produce giveaway by Crossing Healthcare. Patients who have diabetes, pre-diabetes, are on weight loss programs. Children aged 7 to 12 or those with a high body mass index are given free produce and recipes created by dietitians, which are easy to prepare. And now the garden has a welcome booth with a bulletin board, handmade signs identifying the plants, and a signpost directing people to various areas of the garden, thanks to Chris Liu, who did the project to earn his Eagle Scout ranking. I went to Decatur Memorial Hospital and they directed me here because one of the chaplains who works at DMH also works here, said Liu, 18, who recently graduated from Mount Zion High School. He said, take a look at the garden and see if you can do anything. When I first saw it, I was like, wow, it's impressive. I've never seen anything like it, and I thought this would be a good place to do my project. He contacted Allison Raiha, Director of Nutrition and Wellness Services at Crossing, and they discussed what he could do to help out, and they settled on the signs and the booth. The bulletin board on the booth gives the story of the garden's name, based on a legend from the Illiniwek Native Americans who once lived in Illinois. Women in the group were the gardeners who raised the produce to supplement the meat from animals killed by hunters, and of that produce, corn, beans, and pumpkins, the three sisters, were primary staples. A tray holds parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme plants to allow the people who visit to see the herbs growing, as the garden itself cultivated by people in the rehabilitation facility who are learning job and life skills by caring for it, teaches about fresh food. Liu had help making the signs, including an engineer who helped him design the booth and the signpost. The bulletin board is important because it explains the garden's purpose, Liu said. They learn about nutrition and how to take care of a garden, Liu said. To become an Eagle Scout, the candidate must be a Life Scout for a minimum of 6 months, earn 21 merit badges, demonstrate the Scout spirit by upholding the ideals of Scouting in the Boy Scout oath and law, and complete an extensive service project planned, organized, led, and managed by the candidate. Liu has not yet had his formal ceremony, but the paperwork is done and the project complete, and he is considered an Eagle Scout already. The garden is in its fifth season and has been distributing produce for 2 weeks already, which hasn't happened before, Raiha said. The fruit trees have been in place for 2 years and are expected to start producing next summer, and eventually should yield apples, cherries, peaches, and pears. In order to do an Eagle Scout project, you have to have someone who is willing to be the beneficiary and work with you on that, said Tim Lee, the leader of Troop 43 in Mount Zion, which serves scouts from fifth grade through seniors in high school. It isn't free in the sense that we raise the funds for materials, but in the sense that someone is willing to be a mentor to someone else for them to learn the skills, how to do a project and manage a project. Without persons like Allison Raiha, we wouldn't be able to have boys become Eagle Scouts. They have to do something, a project, that's for the community. There's a really great large picture that takes up maybe a third over a third of the page here, and it's of Chris Wright and his father, Tim Liu, plant herbs on Monday at the bulletin board for the garden for Crossing Healthcare's Three Sisters Garden in Decatur. Visit herald-review.com to see video on Liu's project. And there's a supplementary photo of Chris in the back, in front, and in the background, all the metal, like horse troughs, which are used for the gardens on top. And then down below, it looks like there are tubs inserted into the ground. Looks like a really great, wonderful setup, and a lot of vegetables blooming here. All right. Decatur government. City to move on 44 vacant property demolitions. City Council gives approval for city staff to begin legal process. This article is by Annalisa Trofimuk from Decatur. City Council members on Monday agreed to move forward with the tearing down of 44 vacant properties on the city's demolition list, which comprises nearly 200 dilapidated structures. A resolution allowing city staff to begin the legal process of notifying owners of the future demolitions was approved in a unanimous vote during a meeting Monday evening. Mayor Julie Moore Wolf and city staff were present in the city council chambers while council members participated via Zoom, a video conferencing application. Deputy City Manager John Kinseth told the Herald and Review before Monday's meeting that the resolution is not a requirement, but it allows for the, council members and members of the public to stay in the loop in regards to what is happening with the vacant structures throughout the city. He said approving the measure would allow city staff to start the demolition legal process, and that it would still take some time for the properties to actually come down. We are not going to have all 44 properties done in the next month, Kinseth said, adding that the owners could have the chance to rehabilitate the structures after receiving legal notification of the demolition. According to the May 2020 Community Development Report, the city currently has 191 vacant properties on its list awaiting demolition. 13 properties have been demolished this year, and 4 new cases were added to the list. Of the 44 properties approved on Monday, 2 on Hickory and Leafland Streets, deemed unfit in 2010, have been on the list for the longest amount of time. Demolition could take several months, depending on the legal process for specific properties. The Herald and Review reported last year that a quarter of the roughly 200 houses on the list belonged to owners who lived out of state. At the time, Assistant Corporation Legal Counsel Amy Wax said serving court orders to some out-of-state owners was almost impossible because they hide behind limited liability companies or other aliases. Between 2015 and 2019, about 100 demolitions were completed, according to city documents. Councilman David Horn on Monday said while the recent progress with the demolition list is positive, it is not enough. The city of Decatur is not keeping pace with the blight, Horn said. There have been 862 nuisance violations this year. We have declared 127 structures unfit for human habitation, boarded up 60 properties, and the demolition list is actually increased by 19 to 191. City Manager Scott Wrighton said those numbers reflect increased action by staff responsible for monitoring those properties and making additions to the demolition list when necessary. Some of those numbers also indicate a more aggressive position on our staff's part, which I am proud of them for reaching out and making more violations, making more citations, moving more properties through this, Wrighton said. We continue to try to increase the pace and funding for this, and I am pleased in those numbers going up, and I am proud of our staff for taking those numbers higher. Staff members reiterated on Monday that the cost for demolition has been one obstacle, with each project costing around $15,000. Kinseth said the projects are funded through various sources, including state grants and city general fund dollars. In 2017, the Howard G. Buffett Foundation donated $1 million toward demolition efforts, of which there is over $300,000 left, Kinseth said. In other business, Maura Wolf said at the end of the council meeting that she and Police Chief Jim Getz have been working with organizations and local leaders to address issues facing minorities in the community. The discussions followed protests across the country and in Decatur following the death of George Floyd, an unarmed black man who died while in Minneapolis police custody. A meeting last week at the Decatur Police Department included Janelle Norman, who is the president of the NAACP Decatur branch, local officials, and community members. We will be doing some additional meetings with community members, Moore Wolf said. The NAACP is going to set up meetings with individual council members, which is a great idea. Supreme Court ruling protects LGBT rights. Defeat for employers, Trump administration, Associated Press, Washington. The Supreme Court ruled Monday that a landmark civil rights law protects gay, lesbian, and transgender people from discrimination in employment, a resounding victory for LGBT rights from a conservative court. Justices also declined to act on qualified immunity cases involving police and gun rights cases from several states. The court decided by a 6-3 vote that a key provision of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, known as Title VII, that bars job discrimination because of sex, among other reasons, encompasses bias against people because of their sexual orientation or gender identity. An employer who fires an individual for being homosexual or transgender fires that person for traits or actions it would not have questioned in members of a different sex, Justice Neil Gorsuch wrote for the court. Sex plays a necessary and undistinguishable role in the decision, exactly what Title VII forbids. The decision was a defeat not just for the employers, but also the Trump administration, which argued that the law's plain wording compelled a ruling for the employers. Gorsuch, a conservative appointee of President Donald Trump, concluded the opposite. He was joined in the majority by Chief Justice John Roberts and the court's four liberal members. Justice Brett Kavanaugh, Trump's other Supreme Court pick, dissented along with Justice Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas. The court tries to convince readers that it is merely enforcing the terms of the statute, but that is preposterous, Alito wrote in the dissent. Even as understood today, the concept of discrimination because of sex is different from discrimination because of sexual orientation or gender identity. Kavanaugh wrote in a separate dissent that the court was rewriting the law to include gender identity and sexual orientation, a job that belongs to Congress. Still, Kavanaugh said the decision represents an important victory achieved today by gay and lesbian Americans. Trump had a restrained reaction, telling reporters that he had read the decision and that some people were surprised. He added, "But they've ruled, and we live by their decision." That's what it's all about. We live with the decision of the Supreme Court. Very powerful. A very powerful decision, actually. But they have so ruled. The outcome is expected to have a big impact for the estimated 8.1 million LGBT workers across the country, because most states don't protect them from workplace discrimination. An estimated 11.3 million LGBT people live in the U.S., according to the Williams Institute at the UCLA Law School. Gerald Bostock, a gay county government worker from Georgia whose lawsuit was one of three the Supreme Court decided Monday, said no one should have to be fearful of losing their job because of who they are, who they love, or how they identify. and the justices have now made sure that we won't have to worry about that. John Birch, who argued the appeal from a Michigan funeral home owner against a fired transgender employee, said, "Americans must be able to rely on what the law says, and it is disappointing that a majority of the justices were unwilling to affirm that common sense principle. Redefining sex to mean gender identity will create chaos and enormous unfairness for women and girls in athletics, women's shelters, and many other contexts." Meanwhile, the Supreme Court for now declined to get involved in an ongoing debate by citizens and in Congress over policing, rejecting cases Monday that would have allowed the justices to revisit when police can be held financially responsible for wrongdoing. With protests over racism and police brutality continuing nationwide, the justices turned away more than half a dozen cases involving the legal doctrine known as qualified immunity, which the High Court created more than 50 years ago. It shields office officials, including police, from lawsuits for money as a result for the things they do in the course of their job. As a result of qualified immunity, even when a court finds that an official or officer has violated someone's constitutional rights, they can still be protected from civil lawsuits seeking money. The Supreme Court has said that the qualified immunity protects officials as long as their actions don't violate clearly established law or constitutional rights which they should have known about. Public safety. Man arrested in shooting that injured four, say police. This article is by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. A 22-year-old man was arrested at gunpoint after he was observed fleeing the scene early Monday, where four people were wounded in a shooting in the area of the 700 and 800 block East Johns Avenue. The victims, a 33-year-old male, two 29-year-old females, and a 22-year-old female, suffered injuries that were not considered life-threatening, Decatur Police Detective Sergeant Chris Copeland said in a statement. He said multiple shell casings of varying calibers were recovered from the area of the gunfire. A sworn affidavit from Decatur Police said the 22-year-old man was arrested after he was pursued in a car fleeing from the shooting scene and then chased down on foot after he abandoned the vehicle in the 100 block of South Calhoun Street. Officer Brent Morey and I were able to catch the subject behind 935 East Main Street as he attempted to jump over a fence but was unable to do so, Officer Philip Ganley said in the affidavit. Morey and I held the subject at gunpoint and began to give him several commands to show his hands and lie on the ground. Ganley said the man refused to pull one hand out from behind his back and refused to lie face down until he was finally overpowered and arrested at 1:02 a.m. As I returned to the suspect vehicle, a firearm was found resting on the front passenger seat, Ganley added. This firearm was found to be a Taurus PT 111 9mm semi-automatic pistol. It was found to have no magazine but a live round in the chamber. Ganley said the weapon was reported stolen in 2018. The arrested man was booked on preliminary charges of aggravated unlawful use of a weapon and being a felon in possession of a weapon. He was also charged with possession of a stolen firearm and resisting and obstructing police. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Describing the circumstances leading up to the arrest, Ganley said he and Morey already had the area under observation before the shootings occurred, watching a gathering of hundreds of people milling about in the street. We then heard dozens of gunshots coming from the area of the gathering, Ganley said. He said the officers jumped into their squad car to head that way and encountered the suspect's fleeing car coming in the opposite direction. Ganley said the vehicle took off after police used the squad car to spotlight to illuminate the car's interior. Copeland said his department's officers, the Macon County Sheriff's Office, and the Illinois State Police were called to the same area of the shooting Saturday after another large street gathering had taken place. A check of Macon County jail records Monday showed that the arrested man remained in custody with bail set at $100,000, which means he must post $10,000 to be released. Okay, that was all of the articles on the first page. And here's a smaller article on page two, which will wrap up that page. Bomb squad gang leader sentenced to life in prison. Andy Kravitz, Peoria. A federal judge on Monday handed down a life sentence for the leader of the bomb squad street gang, telling the South Peoria man that the neighborhood didn't belong to him. Rather, U.S. District Judge James Shadid told Eugene Nunu Haywood that he was once a child in South Peoria and grew up riding his bike around. That, he said, wasn't possible today due to people like him. You see, the point is that neighborhood does not belong to you. It belongs to the people of this city and those that choose to live there. Those that only want to make their life, make their way through life without being confronted by you, he said. Okay, we're on the local and state page on page A3. Welch sworn in as Lincoln mayor, position approved 10 days after Goodman steps down. Kevin Barlow, Lincoln. Tracy Welch is officially the new mayor in Lincoln. Welch was officially sworn in Monday night after a few moments after the council unanimously approved the nomination to replace Seth Goodman, who resigned June 5th. There were no objections to the nomination prior to the vote. After taking the oath of office, Welch stopped to shake everyone's hand in the room before returning to his seat and reconvening the meeting. Goodman had selected Welch as mayor pro tem and took over following Goodman's announcement. At a work session last week, Welch announced he would be interested in replacing Goodman for the remainder of his term, which expires in April 30th. That must mean April 30th, 2021. Welch had already announced his intention to run for mayor in the election next spring. The council would need to fill a replacement spot for Welch's Ward 1 seat. Last week, Goodman said that Welch will do fine as mayor. Tracy is an engaged, dedicated citizen, Goodman said. When I was elected and later sworn in as the mayor, he not only offered insight, but also direction and always, always, always was available for my countless questions. He was the obvious one to serve in my absence. Part of my decision to resign was made easier knowing that the city of Lincoln would have Tracy Welch at the helm. He has not only served his ward well, but also the entire city for the past several years. We are and will be in good hands, Goodman said. Prior to adjournment, Welch read a letter on behalf of the city, thanking those who had attended recent rallies, prayer vigils, and gatherings in support of Black Lives Matter and anti-racism efforts. The city of Lincoln stands with you to denounce racism and racial discrimination in all forms, Welch said. We stand by peaceful and orderly protests, and we believe that hatred, bigotry, and racism have no place in our city. In other matters, Ward 3 Alderman Kevin Bateman thanked the community for returning to the local businesses. I think it started out kind of slow, but as the days go on and the weather is great, the places in downtown were absolutely packed full, he said. There have been big crowds, and I want to thank everybody for the hard work they put in and the effort they are putting in to support these businesses. It goes a long way to say that this is a city, that this city can come together when we need to. There's a really big picture here of art supplies, paints on a bright green plastic tablecloth in what looks like a community room, and maybe the instructor or leader in a gray t-shirt with a blue mask and a red headband, getting creative because of the coronavirus. The traditional camps that would have started this week at the Children's Museum of Illinois can't be held. Instead, the museum is offering camp-in-a-box projects that can be completed at home. Above, guest services coordinator Elizabeth Merrill works Monday to pack boxes with instructions, parent notes, and 99% of the supplies needed to complete the projects. Some of the required projects, materials like celery, will need to be provided by the camper at home. At bottom left, some of the items included in the boxes are pictured, and those are sponges, different colored popsicle sticks, glue sticks, liquid paints, tape, trays, paper, laces, ribbons. The camps are sponsored by Decatur Memorial Foundation and will provide much-needed revenue to meet expenses while the museum remains closed to the public because of COVID-19 restrictions. "It'll be a tricky time for a while," said Vice President of Operations Abby Kester, pictured below packing a camp in a box. "The museum has lost over half of our operating revenue because all field trips, fundraisers, fairy tale ball, summer camps, all of which normally keep the lights on." Let's see here. Coronavirus. State local response. $275 million to aid COVID-impacted households. Applications to be taken for assistance with food, rent, and more. Garrett Karsten, Belleville. Governor J.B. Pritzker announced $275 million in funding will go towards emergency relief for households impacted by COVID-19. The governor's office said the funding is for the low-income home energy assistance program and Community Services Block Grants Program. Additionally, $90 million is allowed under the CARES Act to increase the number of eligible Illinois residents that can receive assistance. The work to build a state that serves all its people, no matter who they are or what part of Illinois they call home, is more important than ever as we seek to restore our economy while continuing to prioritize our collective health, Pritzker said in a statement. More information can be found online, helpillinoisfamilies.com. According to a Monday statement, Illinois residents can apply for assistance with the following: food, rent, utilities, temporary shelter, medicine, other essential household services. Applications will be handled on a first-come, first-served basis until all funds are depleted, and eligibility will be determined by a number of factors, according to a statement. Eligibility will be determined by a number of factors such as household size and the applicant's ability to verify documentation, and turnaround time under the expanded Help Illinois Families initiative may be extended due to the volume of applications received. Required documentation includes the following: proof of employment, pay stubs for the head of household for the last 30 days, copy of the current heat and electric bills issued within the last 30 days if they pay for their energy directly, copy of their rental agreement if they are renting, showing that utilities are not included, the monthly rental amount and landlord contract or contact information, proof of social security numbers for all household members. The governor's office said upcoming weeks will consist of Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity and statewide community action agencies conducting outreach to high-need communities and spread the word of the recent funding and informing them of how to apply. Well, that has brought us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and be right back with the second part of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, June 16th, 2020. Please stay tuned.